This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to Africa Files. I'm Heather Yunt.
The rule of law means you should be able to say, when all else fails, the law will protect me. Not who I know, not what my political affiliation is, not who I can bribe, etc.
That clip is from Beatrice Mtetwa and the Rule of Law, a documentary produced and directed by Laurie Conway. A strong rule of law in Zimbabwe is something award-winning human rights lawyer Beatrice Mtetwa has spent her career fighting for. Mtetwa is a critic of Zimbabwe's longtime president, Robert Mugabe, and has focused her career on representing human rights activists, including Justina Makoko, the director of the Zimbabwe Peace Project, who was abducted from her home in 2008 and tortured. A year ago, Beatrice Mtetwa herself was arrested on charges of obstructing justice. She was detained for 8 days before being released on bail. In November, she was acquitted. The following are the highlights of a talk Beatrice Mtetwa gave at Carleton University before her trial began last year.
When I say that I go to court knowing that I'm going to lose the case, not because it's the facts or the law is against me, sometimes I get surprised because I don't. And in fact, I've been very lucky because, virtually all my sort of high-profile cases have won them. Because sometimes even the most compromised judge cannot do certain things. You know, if the evidence that comes out of court, I'm doing a case of about 29 activists currently, and if the evidence that comes out of court is such that it just does not implicate a single one of the persons there, and it is so discredited that even a judge who really would have wished to do it cannot convict. So sometimes you do get it working for you. But we do some of these cases, as I say in the documentary, more for purposes of really documenting than anything else. Because, as you know, when you bring legal action, the other side has to respond. And when they respond, you'll get to know who's driving the process, etc. There's the woman there who had the constitutional court unanimously agree that at least 3 violations of her constitutional rights had occurred when she was abducted, tortured, ill-treated, etc. And we were able to get that result because of litigation. I think in that case I brought maybe 11, 12 applications, different ones, because I wanted to really get evidence that was going to show that it was state actors who had abducted her. You know, we had gone to court immediately as soon as she disappeared. And the police said, no, it wasn't police, although they claimed to be police. And then 3 weeks later, she comes, she's in police custody. And I went to the High Court to say the police must be forced to disclose who handed her over to them, because they had said it was an abduction. So I'm not going to deal with her case until the police have told the court why they did not arrest the abductors. And the police then, you know, were forced to say to the state security minister, you know, we don't know where she was. You've got to deal with this. And the state security minister filed an affidavit that said, well, it would not be in the interest of state security to disclose who had her. So we are not going to say that. And so all I needed to do to go to the Constitutional Court was to say, the state security minister has accepted that his guys had her, so he is responsible, you know. We were able to use the system to get information that helped us. And the Constitutional Court couldn't say, oh, no, you know, you can't say that there was an affidavit before them. So, you know, it helps. It helped. Rule of law issues, is it just lawyers? No, I actually don't think so, because the ordinary beneficiaries of what we do are just ordinary persons, you know. And they know that if your rights are violated in this way or that way, you can go to that group of lawyers. And I think, okay, for us as lawyers, we talk of rule of law as a concept. For the ordinary person, it is a question of which lawyers are going to try and help me out of this using the law. They will probably not call it rule of law or whatever, but they know that you can get assistance using the system in a particular way. And it's done in a whole lot of different ways. But I don't think it's just lawyers only who are really into that rule of law concept. And I mean, I don't think you can separate the rule of law from all the other things that happen, you know. I mean, the investor wants assurance that if they come to invest, you know, they will not think of it in terms of rule of law. They'll think, will I get my money back? But I mean, when you sit down and analyze it as a lawyer, it is a rule of law issue. If you want to get into the politics, will I be safe? You know, will somebody protect me? They look at it from their own perspective, but it all narrows down really to the same thing. There are many, many good people who really support the work that we do. Some support not openly, because not everybody wants to be at the forefront of this kind of work. But we have a lot of lawyers who are committed to the cause. We have Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, who've been there. We set up Lawyers for Human Rights in around 1996, and they do fantastic work. We have a fast reaction group as and when we have elections where people can be dispatched to hot spots, etc. And I do believe that we have enough persons who are committed, you know, to the same extent, but perhaps not to the same visibility levels. I know that a lot of the persons I started doing this work with did leave the country, but we've had as many younger people coming up. You know, I just happen to be there because I'm probably the oldest in the group, you know. But civil society generally stands together. In the law society, we've had quite a visible number of lawyers, counselors who've been very strong. I served as Law Society president for a couple of years, and we really worked hard at ensuring that the rule of law issue remains quite alive and relevant throughout, but obviously different leaderships have different emphases. You know, not everybody sees the rule of law as an important aspect of lawyering. But when I was arrested in March, the members demanded a meeting, and they said, this is not Beatrice's arrest. Each one of us have been arrested, and if we do nothing about it, it means none of us can practice law, because they can do this to any one of us. So I'll say that the Bar Association has been absolutely there as and when required, more driven by the members than anything else. You know, in the early 80s, I think the international community had just told itself that it was going to project Zimbabwe as a success story. And they completely closed their eyes to what was going on there. Things were going on, you know. I remember that I defended. I had to apply for somebody who had been deported in '84 for reporting on Kukurahunda, but it never hit the international press, literally, because it was like there was a conspiracy to make Zimbabwe work, even if it wasn't working. And I think that contributed a lot to what then subsequently happened. In the prosecution department, for instance, there was greater capacity to say, no, I'm not going to do that, without being fired. The prosecutors in the AG's office currently cannot do that. Absolutely cannot do that. But I mean, the current Chief Justice was my boss when I was in prosecution. And we were able to say, from a legal perspective, I cannot do this, because this is not, you know, a case that ought to go to court. And you could get away with that because, you know, there was still a blurred kind of, you know, adherence to, at least, you know, but you never get that kind of case again. Well, we did get persons appointed to the bench who really would never have been judges in their entire lifetimes. And for me, those are the most dangerous members of the judiciary, because for them it will not really matter who is in power. If the MDC wins tomorrow, and they are now wielding the big, you know, stick of power, those judges will just swing and go there, because that's the only way they know how to keep their jobs. And for me, that's the most dangerous kind of judiciary. I don't see them really, you know, remaining where they are, because they would fear that they would lose their jobs, you know. So once the bench was politicized and the judges were removed and others appointed when they really didn't qualify, for me, that is a problem. That is why I have a problem with the so-called new constitution, because if it will be interpreted by the same people, there are no guarantees that whoever wins, that the judiciary will really then become a proper judiciary where they just apply the law without taking into account the political considerations. Yes, the judiciary has been politicized, and there are some very good judges, you know, who do the right thing, and when they do, they get into trouble. Most of you will know that the judge who gave an order for me to be released when I was arrested is being disciplined. He happens to be the same judge who issued a warrant to have certain ministers who are alleged to have been involved in corrupt activities to be searched, and he's now being disciplined himself. So obviously, for the other members of the judiciary, the fear factor comes in, you know. If you make certain decisions, your tenure on the bench will not be guaranteed, and therefore they may not do the right thing, you know, because of that fear. Which is why I feel whoever wins, the judiciary will just swing and be with them. And we don't need that kind of judiciary. Women, what role can women play? I personally think we should just get rid of all these men and get the women to rule the country. It probably would work much better, you know. It's very difficult in Zimbabwe for women to contest elections on their own terms. There are women in politics, but more often than not, they get into politics because the men have allowed them to be in those positions. So you find that they are unable to really exercise free will because it's space that has been given to them by the men. And I found that the women have generally been weak when it comes to political issues. I mean, when Justina was abducted and for more than 3 weeks, we didn't know where she was. And she's a very active member of the women's movement. Unfortunately, I'm not, because, you know. And she, I was saying to the women's groups, be visible, do something. I mean, let's hear what you've got to say about. She's a member of your movement, for God's sake, where are you? But they were visible by their complete absence. I even went to see the Minister of Women's Affairs. I don't know what that ministry does, but I went, and she said, oh, I can't really help. It's a shame. It's terrible, but I can't do much. For women, it's that much harder because generally women are in a weak position even at the best of times. But in a place like Zimbabwe, your marriage can go because of the kind of work you do. Those were the women. You heard Jenny Williams saying I represented a large group of them. What she didn't mention is that at least about 7 of those women were told by their husbands, go back to where you were, because of what? What are you going in the street banging pots for? You know, so it's that much harder, especially in a country where the economy is where it is. You know, you can hardly make ends meet, and people are just thinking, you should be at the market selling something to look after the kids. What are you wasting time for? So for women, it's that much harder. So which is why I really salute women such as the Woza women, because it's not just fear of arrest. Your marriage can break because of your participation in Woza activities.
That's Beatrice Metetua, a Zimbabwean human rights lawyer, speaking at Carleton University last year. I'm Heather Yent, and this has been an Africa Files podcast. Africa Files is a network of volunteers committed to promoting alternative analyses of African issues. Find out more at africafiles.org.